And the research they were producing in the late 90s and early 2000s was pretty cool. It got people excited. And that's when the light went off for a lot of philosophers. Hey, isn't this kind of what we're supposed to be doing? Right? Talking about the summum bonum, a Latin term that philosophy has used in the West to refer to the greatest good. Happiness is often thought to be the greatest good. It doesn't have to be the greatest good, but in most philosophies in the West, I think it is. And so like a lot of philosophers, I started to offer a course on the philosophy of happiness, and it's been a really successful course because of the content. The content has changed. Things have been updated. Things have gone into the course, come out, gone back in. There are places on our reading schedule this semester that still need to be filled in, where there's some adjustments to make. So that's fine, but it's a mature, active, ongoing course is what I'm trying to communicate. That dates from a particular blossoming of research, which got a lot of philosophers to wonder why they weren't offering this course. After all, philosophy has traditionally thought about this topic. That kind of led to another course called Wisdom. And because the more I offered happiness, the more I thought, well, you know, there's this other thing. Philosophy means the love of wisdom, right? There's this other topic that in happiness studies keeps coming up, that maybe wisdom will lead to a kind of happiness that you would want. Maybe not. So I developed a course on wisdom, which I still offer, not as often as I'd like. The third course I developed, which I just offered for the first time last spring, is philosophy of food. And it may not seem like it fits the sequence, but in fact, they kind of fit as philosophy of well-being classes. And so the idea, you know, the initial research initiative, which I never would have thought was part of my career, which was to kind of understand happiness, has led to two other courses which are interestingly related. So that's where modern philosophy of happiness classes come from. They actually come from philosophers waking up and realizing that other people are generating interesting research and thought on the subject, and so, hey, we ought to get in the game. Get back in the game, I should say. Okay. So here are a couple of problems in happiness. Okay, if you could take a couple of notes on these just so you have something to look at when you're in a small group. I chose a basic problem, I chose a weird problem. I didn't choose all the same kinds of problems, but let me just give you a couple of notes on this, and then that'll give you something to kind of respond to when you get to know a few people in the class in a few minutes. The first problem we can call the stability objectivity problem. And we will be reading about this fairly soon in the course. I'm going to put it this way. I'm going to put it in sort of stages just to make it quick. One question you might ask is, does happiness really even have a stable meaning? That's a problem. Happiness is a fuzzy concept. When we talk about happiness, are we really talking about anything that we can be sure we're talking about the same thing? Are we talking about something that's one thing? This is a word that gets used in lots of different ways for seemingly disparate things that might come up in your small group discussion. So, you know, does it really have a stable meaning? And then the next level of the problem is, okay, even if it has a stable meaning, can you know it? Something can be stable, a stable reality. Like, yeah, we know when we're in the presence of it, but we don't know anything about it. So, you know, one favorite example would be, well, before I do that, let me just do this. So is it knowable? So even if we could pick it out and we know what we're referring to when we talk about happiness, is it something that's knowable? And who? What disciplines? If you're Cicero in Roman culture, you think it's philosophers, and you go visit your guru philosopher. Cicero did that. A lot of Romans did that. They went to philosophers the way we go to therapists. So who knows it if it's knowable, and what disciplines study it? But is it knowable? Is it something you can actually have knowledge of? You know, an example, for instance, today that's kind of on my mind because of this hurricane. is that, you know, we can know pretty precisely what counts as a hurricane. We can define the limits of what counts as a hurricane. Doesn't mean we know a lot about what they're going to do. Doesn't mean that we can predict their behavior necessarily. So knowability or prediction or what, there's a lot of different kinds of knowledge. That's kind of a further question. And even if we can know it, can we use that knowledge to get happy? I mean, you could know, you might know that you're not going to be happy. I mean, the knowledge of happiness might be a knowledge that it ain't coming to you. Right? Can you get happier? And one thing in your small groups would be to ask each other what your initial intuitions, because this is, we're at the start of a research project here, 15-week research project, each of you are going to, we're going to all do together. You know, what's your initial intuition on this question? Do you think that you can make yourself significantly happier than you are now? Researchers are divided on this. There's a famous researcher who argued in the psych literature that you're no more likely to make yourself happier than make yourself taller. I mean, what if the knowledge of happiness is just the knowledge about how happy you're going to be? You know what I mean? Like, knowledge of tallness is kind of, at this point for me anyway, it's kind of knowledge about how tall I'm going to be. You know, I mean, some of you are going to grow a little more, I think. It might not be knowledge that allows you to do anything to your happiness. It might just be knowledge, oh, so that's kind of what happiness is. Okay, so that's where I am in the happiness universe. Okay, great. Lots of questions, right? So let's call that the first problem. That's problem number one. This is actually a bunch of problems, right? Okay, are you with me? We need to do our nonverbal exercise. We have to do that right away. Okay, so some of you have had me know this one. It's really helpful for me if you, in real time, you know, you're already finding words. Thank you. In real time, you need to communicate nonverbally to me. And there's a lot of things you can communicate to me nonverbally, but there are three things I want us to practice right now. Okay, you ready? First one is yes. And I want you to communicate yes this way. Right? Okay, can we do that on three? One, you got, some of you are really advanced, you're already doing it. One, two, three. Yes. Yeah. Little nods are good. Sometimes you want a big nod. It's your call. Okay? Okay, second thing we're going for here, it really helps, because I repeat, I slow down, I start repeating things, but if you start nodding, I speed up, I'm like a remote control, you can like, you know, okay. So, second one is no, can we do that on three? No. One time I did this exercise, and I got them backwards, and no. And everybody's like, okay, I guess in this class, that's going to be no. And yeah, so, okay, I got it right this time. Okay, the third one, we're going to need to actually practice a little bit more. So this half of the class is going to show this half of the class a nonverbal expression which reflects confusion, lack of understanding, puzzlement. Okay, and we don't want to show this to each other because it doesn't look cool to be confused, right? You want to show everybody that you know what's going on and on. Oh, yeah, I'm getting it all, no problem. Maybe. But in philosophy, confusion is really productive. Like, you get extra credit for showing confusion in philosophy. Philosophy really starts with wonder and confusion. So, think about your favorite confusion class. Your most confusing class. Think about, yeah, it might help, actually. Think about, you've got over 200 muscles in your face for communicating all kinds of wonderful things. It's not so wonderful things. Confusion is one of the wonderful things. So let's see. This side is going to show this side their confusion. You guys should look at them. Turn toward them. Yeah, they're going to show you. Turn toward them. Watch them. On three. Now you're going to, and you get to evaluate. Pick your favorites here. Okay. And I'm trying to watch everybody. Ready? Are you guys ready? Confusion. Don't. No, not yet. You're going to like. Only. Okay, you're just going to get in that state. Stay there. Okay, that's okay. You can do that. Yeah. One, two, three. Good. I'm not seeing much back there.
Yeah.
What?
It's more disinterest.
Yeah, I saw boredom. I did see boredom. Yeah, no, you want, okay, could you did a really good thing with the eyebrows. That's, yeah.
That was more concern. Okay. Well, one more time, you guys. Ready? One, two, three. Yeah, that's great. For some of you, it comes a little more naturally. Okay. Can we just, you
want to see the other thing?
Yeah, can we see that?
Yeah, absolutely. And be critical of that as well. Okay, one, two, three. The single eyebrow lift is very effective. That's horror.
Oh my god. Top one again, sorry.
Okay, one more time. Ready? One, two, three. Yeah, you can use your hands.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. There was an expression that you guys don't do this anymore. You people used to just go like that.
Goes right.
Went right by. Okay.
Yeah, so that was problem number one. Okay, problem number two. Okay, let's call problem number two the history, happiness, self problem. I just made that up. It's not the label. The label doesn't matter. I'll just explain it to you real quick. The history, happiness, self problem. Here's the problem. Happiness has a history. That's not controversial. In fact, we're going to read most of a history of happiness in this course. Real good one. We don't read all the chapters, but we read most of them. The self has a history. You know, you tend to think, well, we've just always been who we are. Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, genetically, we're pretty similar to what we were for the last 50,000 years. But culturally, the idea of, like, what is a self? How do people think of themselves as selves? That is variable historically. You know, we think of selves as invested in rights. That's something that only has a few hundred years history behind it. Part of being a self is to be a bearer of rights, right? It's pretty close to my core concept of the self. So happiness has a history. People didn't think of happiness the same way through Eastern and Western cultural histories. The self has a history, and it's different also East and West. So there's cultural variation and historical variation. Here's the problem. Ready? Put this in your notes. If you do learn about happiness by reading the historical record, I'll give you a short version in a second, sorry. Whose happiness do you learn about when you study happiness? Yours or somebody else's? That's the short version. I'll say it again. Whose happiness do you learn about when you study happiness? Yours or somebody else's? Happiness today or happiness for a culture and kind of human self that existed 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago? So the historicity, another way to put this problem is the historicity of happiness poses theoretical problems for knowing happiness. Just knowing the history of thought on happiness may or may not help you understand what happiness is for someone your age in 2017 going forward, right? As long as we're talking about variables, of course, happiness is going to vary across the lifespan, too. So we could have thrown that in here. Okay, you guys know what I mean? Is that clear? Okay. Third problem is kind of a weird one. I just thought I'd toss it in here. I don't think I've used this before. And this is a different way to start the class. Anyway, the third problem is, I'm just going to put it this way in terms of a question. What if you succeed? I think I just misspelled succeed. What if you succeed? What if you make yourself significantly happier? I think this course has actually made me significantly happier. I've taught it for over 10 years, and it's been a source of persistent reflection for me, especially while I'm teaching it, obviously. But what if you succeed? And what I mean by that is, if you made yourself a lot happier, how would it change your relationships to everyone else in your life? Would it? Would it change them in simple ways? Or maybe complicated ways? I mean, think about other examples in your life when you grew up and you acquired something that you would call maybe an adult competency, like in the transition from middle school to college, somewhere in that, I think you could probably point out moments where you became a slightly different person. You acquired something maybe you would call maturity, and it changed your relationship to people who you regarded then as less mature, right? Or maybe there were people in your social world who became more mature, and they kind of regarded you as less mature. I don't know. That could happen, right? The point is that forms of enlightenment, whether it's becoming wise or becoming happy, if they're real changes in you, then they can cause changes in your social relationships. They can cause changes in, you won't view, if you achieve something in the area of happiness or wisdom, you won't view people who are struggling with those issues in exactly the same way. This was put to me kind of humorously many years ago by a friend who said, you know, I'm really happy that you're teaching all this happiness. It seems to be making you happier. But, you know, your happiness is making the rest of us miserable. And he was joking, you know. But, you know, sort of half joking. Like, so would it be a problem if you succeeded? That's kind of a weird happiness problem to have. Let's hope that that's a happiness problem that you have, right? But consider the possibility that there are non-trivial effects from becoming significantly happier, assuming it's possible. I want to encourage you to maintain skepticism about problem number one. You know, problem number one is where the skeptics should really be hanging out. Okay, but what if you get all the way to here and you succeed? Is that a simple thing? Okay, I could go on about that, but we're going to talk about that in the course. Okay, any questions about these three problems? There's tons more to say about this. The readings in the course address a lot of these. But what I'd like you to do, if you're not totally puzzled at this point, is I'm going to ask you to get into small groups, and I'd like you to introduce yourselves to each other. We do a lot of work in small groups. Philosophy happens sometimes in conversation in a way that it can't happen in other modes. So if you could get in small groups, introduce yourselves, just kind of break the ice a little bit, and try to see if any of these problems resonate for you, if you want to say anything about any of these problems, or if you want to raise any questions in general about happiness. Or here's another thing you might want to do in your small group. Are there things about happiness you want to kind of say, well, at least I know this about happiness, right? Because, you know, if you're asking about how happiness will change your social relationships, you know, you have some experience in your life about how realizations of different kinds in your maturation have changed your relationships. You also know that some people are happier than others. So that kind of relates to this one. Even if it's hard to get a hold of what we mean by happiness, we do have kind of pretty, I think we have pretty reliable information that we can make reliable judgments about other people's happiness sometimes. Sometimes I can tell that my students are not happy. Sometimes I can tell that you're really happy. Right? Okay. So what you might do in your small group is just identify things that you think are pretty solid claims to make about happiness, or questions about it, or react to these three problems. Okay, we're just for just 7 minutes. If you could, maybe you four could turn your chairs together. Maybe you four, maybe you three, maybe you four back there, maybe you five. We always wind up with four people in a line here. So you guys, why don't you come up here and move your chairs here and talk to each other. Okay, introduce yourselves, get to know each other, and get back to work. So if you could submit that form, are you guys doing okay with that? Is that happening? Okay, good. So first thing on your to-do list is browse the two websites. Second thing is to read for Thursday. And for Thursday, your reading is, let's see, what is it again? So you know from the wiki that the reading is McMahon, Chapter 1. That's our history book. And then these two philosophers, Kahn and Vetrano. And then what I'll do is, for each of our readings, I'll give you kind of a one-paragraph, focus paragraph, to give you kind of a sense of what to focus on in the reading.
And then to get this reading, you're going to go to this. You're going to courses.alfino, and you're going to find Kahn and Vetrano here. You guys with me? And then you're going to find McMahon down here.
I think we're down to four chapters from that book. We used to read the whole book.
It's really good.
I did read the whole book. Okay.
So those are the readings for Thursday. And if you don't get an email from me tonight saying, hey, the roster's up, go get your readings, then you need to email me and we need to fix it. You see what I mean? Because what you should see tonight is you should see a roster with your name on it. And then you should be able to log in with the password you just gave me and the email you just gave me, and then you should be able to retrieve your PDFs. Are we good on that? I'm not seeing all nods, but yeah, we're good? Okay. If it's a problem, the main thing to remember is if you don't hear from me, get in touch with me. If you don't see your name on the roster tonight, get in touch with me. Okay. Okay, so feel free to interrupt with questions. So there are two other things about the mechanics of the course that I need to go over with you. One is the assignments, like what is it that you do in the course? And the second thing is, which I won't say much about today, is a kind of maybe peculiar feature about my course is the way I use anonymity, which I'll say a little bit about that. So for the assignments, though, when you're registered as a student in the class, you will automatically get the default assignments. Oops, I added a book group, so that's not quite right. Hang on a second. Okay, I was illustrating this. Okay, so when you get enrolled in the class, you will get a default grading scheme, and the default grading scheme is this is a little bit misleading. The default grading scheme is something called Q&W, and that's by default, that's 35% of your grade. A final exam. And that is, I think that's actually default to 30%. I think I've adjusted. And then it's something called the My Philosophy of Happiness paper. And that is a 7 to 10 page term paper in which you try to synthesize the most valuable course material and ideas for your own philosophy of happiness. It's a really interesting assignment. It's a very valuable thing. I've had students write to me after graduating and say that they've actually referred back to their My Philosophy. They've had to update their My Philosophy of Happiness paper. So it's a really nice document to produce. Now, these are required elements, and I'm going to say a little bit about each one, but it's also important for you to know that I don't stipulate the exact percentage weight. So the final exam can actually be between 20% and 35%. And the, ignore the book group, the My Philosophy of Happiness paper can be between 20% and 35%, and the Q&W can be 20% to 40%. Okay, so these are defaults. That's if you don't do anything, that's the weights that they will have. But the point to notice is that you can change the weight of the required assignments to make room for other assignments that you might want to do. And that's the grading scheme model. You get to stipulate some of the things that you are assessed on in the course. And you get to adjust some of the weights of things that you have to be assessed on. So before we talk about the other assignments, let me just say a couple of things about the ones that are required. Q&W refers to quizzes and writing. And really, on a week-by-week math basis, in addition to discussing things in class, it's how we become better philosophers. We become better philosophers because we read carefully and we have the material, we're ready to talk about it. Become better philosophers because we get in small groups with people and we ask good questions. We show concern for helping people develop their own views. We try to develop our own views by expressing them.
So that small group discussion is really valuable because it's a chance. It's like the rough drafts of your papers. It's a chance to say stuff and become more articulate in developing your view. Developing your view and become more articulate in expressing it, right? So that's huge. In becoming a better philosopher and becoming better at expressing yourself as a philosopher are really tightly connected things, okay? So quizzes in writing will be, sometimes you'll come in early in the semester, it will tend to be a reading quiz. And my guarantee to you is that if you read carefully, if you read reasonably well, these questions will be easy to get right. I'm also going to try and make them hard to guess if you didn't read them. But every once in a while, we throw out a question because it doesn't meet those criteria. So it's very important for you to hold me to those criteria, right? Easy to get right if you read, hard to guess. Nobody complains about the hard to guess part. if you guess right, that's great. So that's the most objective assessment I do. I'm also going to ask you to do short writing. Sometimes it's going to be a group, and you're just going to turn in a result on a group Google form, and you're all going to get points based on having done it. Okay? Sometimes it's by completion. Sometimes you're going to write something in class or by the end of the night. We'll pick a deadline together. You're going to write a paragraph, and I'm going to give you some assessment of it. Sometimes you're going to write something, and you're going to get it assessed by several of your peers. We're going to be doing some peer assessment. But my experience is that goes better when you don't know whose work you're reading. So I'll talk about anonymity in a minute. But Q&W refers to quizzes in writing, major method for developing yourself as a philosopher. We'll probably do, these are all points, and we curve these, by the way. We try to curve between A and B minus. I don't guarantee that everybody stays in that range. Sometimes we have some outliers, and that goes down into the C range. But that's kind of my grading distribution. You get good information about your performance. There are not many A's. There are a fairly generous number of A minuses. But the goal is to kind of give you information without, you know, being horrible about it. You know, I don't need to beat you up about your grades. So everybody should do fine, but I do want to make you better philosophers, and Q&W is one of the ways to do that. This is probably going to be your most challenging required element in the course, and so it's good that it's curved. Final exam, likewise, is you're going to turn in two essays. It's up here, right? They're open book, open note. Everything you do in this course is open book, open note. You're going to write 2 to 3 page essays during the last week of the term. Okay. The philosophy of happiness paper is going to come in a couple weeks before that. It's going to come in right after Thanksgiving. Okay? So those are the required elements, things that help you improve along the way, and then things that help you make a kind of philosophical statement about the course and its material and the problem, of course. But there's other things you might choose. For instance, some people like to get into book group. I'm going to bring in books over the next few weeks to try to entice you to join a book group in happiness. You're welcome to look online and find your own books to suggest for book groups. You can join a book group in this section and have people in the previous section. You'll see the roster tonight, right? You can have book groups across sections. And book groups are fun. They're neat ways to do things. They're neat ways to earn your grade on your own terms if you like that. Class presentation, any class presentation can be a distinct element in your grading scheme. Lately, I've invited students, if they want, to co-teach with me. So that's kind of seems like a strange thing to do, but I'm getting a little more used to it, and I kind of like it. So if anybody wants to co-present a class, like the regular material that I'm going to present, let's do it. We would probably meet ahead of time, talk about the material, divide up the labor. Might be kind of fun. You can write a formal academic paper as part of your grading scheme. So notice that some things are formal, some things are informal, some things are optional, some things are required. And then there are these drop boxes. I'll explain them in a minute. So the final exam I told you about, that is a required element. The most widely chosen optional exercises are these. These are the happiness practica. My wisdom class has wisdom practica. My philosophy of food class has food practica. Practica are ways that philosophers develop by having experience, by going out and having a kind of experience on purpose and then reflecting on it, right? So, for instance, in the course, we have literature related to mindfulness meditation. You may want to try to learn how to meditate. In fact, this semester I have a meditation teacher who I'm going to involve in optional evening group meditation if you want to learn how to do that. You could do it on your own. My method of teaching this is to give you a self-paced, self-guided set of resources. And then you would write a journal about that. It takes a while to learn how to meditate. You need to give yourself at least 4 or 5 weeks. There's literature in the course on, there's literature in the course on savoring. Savoring is the act of getting pleasure from your experience. There's a famous well-known psychologist, Fred Bryant, who pioneered the savoring research. You could choose a practicum in which, when we get to that point in the course, when you read Bryant's research and he gives you advice about savoring, then you go out and design 2 or 3 savoring experiences, and you try to have them, and then you write about them. Okay, so that's savoring. There are site researchers who have produced interesting research on gratitude. Gratitude's a pretty interesting phenomenon. It's a kind of savoring, actually. So there's a researcher in particular who has done research asking test subjects to keep gratitude journals, and then he does a kind of pre-post assessment of the effects of those journals on people's outlook, sense of well-being. So you would follow that. You would do a gratitude journal for about 3 weeks, and then you would reflect on that to me. Some of you, we do reading in this course on yoga philosophy. Yoga philosophy has a very specific kind of model for happiness. It's pretty interesting. Yoga also happens to be an incredibly popular thing in the U.S. these days. How many of you do yoga? Right. Okay, good. So you might use this experience to start a yoga practice, to attend a class, maybe you've signed up for one for the first time, or to deepen your yoga experience. But again, as with the others, you would be encountering course reading that you would then combine with the experience, the practicum experience, in this case yoga, and then you would reflect on that in a journal. Okay. I will add one more to this. I have an idea for a new one. For the last few years, I've been a hospice volunteer. It's been a very interesting experience. And we have a very powerful class in the course on death. If you've had a loss experience recently, we can talk about whether that you need to come to that class. We can negotiate that. But the reflection on death is a really important part of happiness. And philosophers have always believed this. Socrates started this. To become a philosopher is to learn how to die. Yikes. Okay? So the reflection... So my hospice volunteering has been very useful to me. I get a new patient tomorrow. This 95-year-old woman who wants somebody to come and read to her. So... But it would be a complicated practicum. You'd have to qualify to be a volunteer. That doesn't take too much work. But there are 2 places in town you can do that, and one's a little quicker than the other. But that's a big commitment. I don't know if that's something that you guys would want to choose, but it's out there if you do. And it's a pretty interesting experience. So those are the practical. There'll be 5 eventually. People, you know, if you do a good job of them, they tend to be graded by completion, you know, by do a sincere effort. So they're attractive. They do take a lot of time. So I don't want you to do more than 2 of them in the course. Although, again, I've had students write to me after graduation and say, wow, I finally got time to do the other practicum. You know, so you can always come back to them later and do them on your own. And there's a completely academic course. You don't have to choose an experiential component at all. It's completely up to you. I don't know what else is going on in your academic life or how busy you are. These do take some time. They are very popular, and they do, in my experience, they do help you understand something about happiness. Okay. So we'll definitely take questions on those as we get into the course more. You might want to lower these percentages a bit to make room for a journal assignment. You can come in at 5% for 3 journal entries or 10% for 6. I used to have separate assignments for the music of happiness. I used to have a really popular assignment in which people collected the music that makes them happy in different ways and wrote about it. I'd like to roll that into the journal assignment. So if that's, in other words, if you want to, you know what I mean, like go through your music collection. It's, I used to love getting these. I just had too many, hundreds. And it's a great assignment. You know, I mean, to think, after you've read a little bit about happiness, to think about how you use music in different contexts to affect mood and happiness and outlook. But anyway, that you could roll that into a journal assignment. Likewise, I used to have a separate assignment called movie reviews, where you watched a movie that had a strong happiness theme, and you wrote a paper about it. I'd like to roll that into the journals. So that would simplify that a little bit. If you want to do a midterm, you can. It would be an open book, open note essay exam. People do choose the midterm, and so that would be another optional grading experience. I'm sorry, it's not informal, it's actually formal. And then there's My Philosophy of Happiness, we talked about that, Q&W. Short-term research happens when you get an interest in knowing more about something in the course than we're going to talk about. Or when you get an interest, you want to challenge something in the course. Maybe you're skeptical about something that we read. Or maybe you want to update the literature on something that we read. There's a lot of new research on marriage and happiness, relationship and happiness. So some of you might want to dig into that stuff. So short-term research is just an assignment that comes up when you want to get credit for answering a research question that comes up through you in the course. Okay, that's a lot, and I think at this point, my sense is that that's about all I can tell you and expect you to kind of keep in your head. Maybe a couple more things. There are two books in the course. One, they don't come up immediately, but this one comes up sooner. This is Dan Habron's Very Short Introduction to Happiness. Hang on, we just have a couple more things to do. And this one is by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. And it's called Finding Flow. So you'll want to order those. They should be in the bookstore. Has anybody gone over to the bookstore? Maybe not, maybe. Okay. Or you can get them online. Okay. Let's see if we're caught up. I think we're almost there. Maybe you guys can think about whether you have a question. Give me a minute to see if I'm through everything. Oh, yeah. Okay, so here's something I forgot to tell the first class. But it's kind of interesting, I think. For the last few years, I've been using anonymity and pseudonymity in interesting ways to make it possible for us to share more work and for us to review each other's work. And really, it allows a lot of transparency, a disturbing amount of transparency in some ways. So each of you will get a saint name on Thursday, and that will be a name that you keep confidential. Because sometimes when we take a reading quiz, I'll send out an email to everybody with the results by saint name. That way, if I made a mistake in scoring the quiz, you can catch it, right? And I do make mistakes. Okay. So your saint name is your pseudonym for grading purposes. Then every time you turn in an assignment that requires anonymity, this program will assign you an animal name. And I'm very excited to say we just updated the entire list of saint names and the entire list of animal names. And it's much longer now. There are like 800 Catholic saints. And I think my new saint list is, I was getting tired of seeing the same saints. And my new saint list is like 550. I took out a bunch of them, you know, some of them didn't work. And my animal list used to be like 30 animals, and now it's like 200. So I had to take out some animals that nobody wants to be, like rat. Nobody wants to be rat. Sloth, right?
Turtle every time.
You got turtle every time?
Every time?
Is that right? Yeah. And then there's some really attractive animals that everybody wants to be. They think it's going to improve their grade if they should be tarsier or koala or something like that. So this is a lot of fun because we can actually now be totally transparent about grade information. You'll know, you know, where your grade falls in the stack. You won't know who got what grade. You'll know yours. We can be totally transparent about writing. So
in a peer review, you might review four people's writing, but it's very easy with the pseudonyms for us to distribute all the writing back to everybody. So you can get a sense of, you know, where you are. So for every Q&W assignment we do, and even for the essays, you're going to see everybody's work, and you're going to see the entire grade distribution. And it's really a good way to set, it's a really good way for you to get more information about how you're approaching course assignments. And it's also a really good way to kind of separate some kinds of subjectivity, for me, from the task of giving you good advice about becoming a better philosopher. I find that I can be a little more candid when I'm giving comments to, you know, giraffe and bear than when it's like, oh, yeah, that's right, that was you, right, yeah, you're the guy who sits there in class, right? You see what I mean? So it's a little impersonal, but it really opens up some possibilities for coaching you to be better philosophers. And I should say, just in case it's not clear, that a lot of the work you do in the class will have your name on it. Your My Philosophy of Happiness paper will not be anonymous. Your journals, are, there's no need for anonymity in journals. You see what I mean? See what I mean? Okay. So we use anonymity and pseudonyms in the course pretty extensively. I think the program does a good job of managing it. It allows us to be very transparent with assessment information. It allows you to get really good information about how your philosophy is going, how your writing and philosophy is going. Just like being a really active and good small group member helps get you the best information about how your philosophy expression and thinking verbally is going. Okay, so philosophy is it's something you've got to do to get better at. And you don't just sit in class for weeks and weeks and wait for an exam and you become a better philosopher, right? If you could turn up the nonverbal a little bit, I know we're getting towards the end here, right? You see what I'm saying? Okay.
Is the peer review, like,
oh,
right,
you're the
response online, or is that, like, in class?
It happens largely outside of class. So you'll get an email with an attachment that has a lot of student work, and then you'll be able to look up four people that you'll be assigned, and you'll give them comments. They won't know who gave them the comments, but they'll get comments back from four people. You'll get comments back from four people, right? And this is what we do in academics. This is what peer review is. You know, you send your work into an editor, and the editor, you know, sends it to other people, takes your name off the paper. Called blind peer review. This is how I get better as a philosopher, right? I send my work to different venues, and some of them are more competitive than others, right? And they take my name off the paper, and they send it out to a bunch of experts, supposedly. The experts write comments, which I see. The editor makes a judgment about how ready this thing is for publication. You see where I'm going with this? So this anonymity and pseudonymity thing actually allows me to model peer academics and the methods that we use to get better as intellectuals and academics at our fields of specialty. So I'm pretty excited about it. I've been doing it for a few years now, and I'm definitely better at it than when I started. I'll be taking your advice about getting better at it. Still, I mean, another thing that I forgot to show the other class, and we're almost done. I'd like to do Survey Monkey surveys of my classes on specific things. Last year's happiness class, we had a question about the websites. They were a little confusing. I think I finally succeeded on that, so I don't ask that question anymore. I was still doing a lot of quizzes. That's a little different now, but that was okay. But this is the last two are the really important ones to show you. This is strong disagree. I favor an anonymous grading of some of my work in the course. So students really buy into this model. It's pretty cool. It's a little scary because, you know, your work has to speak for itself. It's just going to be St. Bartholomew, and this is your work program. I value peer evaluations. I was interested. I'd like to get better scores on this last question. I'd like to kind of get more strong agrees on this. So I'm going to try some things this semester that hopefully will make you happier with your peer evaluations.
It's hard to do peer evaluations well, but that number is going to only get better if we can learn how to be better peer evaluators, so that at the end of the semester you say, wow, that was really helpful what those students told me, right? Okay, good. Good for non-verbal, by the way. Okay, see you guys on Thursday.